And Zula Okie Doke move and lays it up for two. Lee with a nifty move there.
He could go all the way, and the freshman takes it to the house with no time on the clock. Are you kidding me? He takes it 60 yards. Welcome to Redbird Nation.
And the shoe. She gives it to Katie Broadway. Broadway taking it herself down the left side. No good. But she's going to get her own rebound. Kicks it out. Katie Sykes for three. No,
from local high school action to the birds and the pros, with live interviews, reporting, debate, and discussion, WDND's Red Zone brings you all the sports you can handle each week. The Red Zone starts now, only on 103.3 WDND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.
Just when you thought you'd gotten rid of us, we're back here for another semester of the Red Zone. After a long summer break, we are back. There are plenty of sports we've missed, so let's dive right back into it. I'm Leo Stauder, your sports director here at WZND. I'm joined by my same crew of guys from last semester. We have Joey Dwyer, the king of Bettendorf, Iowa, and also had a new promotion. He's the production director here at WZND, so congratulations on that, Joey.
You deserve it, man.
So we've got a lot of new stuff coming your way that you're going to be hearing. New open for this show,
yeah.
A bunch of new promos that...
We got to get our promo going, too.
Exactly. You know, I think our promo is perfect right now.
I think we do got to go.
Leo really made a mistake going into journalism. I think acting was really the way for you to go.
Hey, no.
Yeah, I mean, you could see him on Broadway, possibly, though, in a couple of years from now.
And that voice you just heard there is our producer and WZND Director of Morale and Vibes, Joseph Kennedy from Naperville, Illinois.
Hey, thank you for having me on for another semester here with the boys. Last semester was good, but I think we got a lot to improve on here coming up.
It really is a fortunate thing that we're able to bring back the whole crew from last semester just because there's been so much turnover, people graduating and whatnot, that we were able to bring the three of us back, that we will have a whole year to continue building off what we did last year. I mean, I was... You know, every time now three dudes do something now, they call it Last Dance with the Bros or the Boys or whatever. But this really is what we got going here. It's the Last Dance.
This is the Red Zone.
And we get a full year together again, too. And I think, like before in other Red Zones, you've always had people leaving out, like, one semester after another semester. So it's good to get some consistency going with the boys, and I think it's going to be a great time.
Okay, but my question is, if this is the Red Zone Last Dance, does that make Leo MJ?
I don't know.
I think of myself more as the Phil Jackson of this crew.
I mean, yeah, you are the coach. Joey, you would probably have to be the MJ because you've been on here the longest.
I'll be
your Pippin.
So you can be my Scottie Pippin.
I'll be your Pippin.
And then Jack Blednick, who we've got in studio right now, coming on a little later. Jack, you can be Dennis Rodman.
Yeah. Okay, and then...
You've got the boards.
Yeah.
So we'd say... Faculty advisor Steve Cease would be the Jerry Krause of this.
Oh, that's brutal.
That we're doing.
That's brutal. I hope Steve's not listening right now.
Sorry, Steve. But hey, Krause did a lot for that Bulls
team. He did.
So
he got a bad go of things in that documentary, that's for sure.
Definitely.
But it was a pretty wild summer, guys. There was a lot we didn't get to.
Oh, my.
And really, all three of us were pretty busy, too. I mean, we were all working. We were all doing some big J moves. It was pretty cool to see. So we didn't get – I mean, we didn't get to maybe – touch on as much as we wanted to this summer. There's tons of stuff we missed, but we were all very busy, so I think that brings us to a lot of good experience to what we have going on now this year.
And our last show was the hour before leading up to the NFL draft.
And we'll get there.
Talk about some Bears, and we only got an hour to talk about everything, so we got multiple weeks until the NFL season starts again, and obviously NBA and NHL a long time away, and some college football. So we have time to talk about things, so we're going to fit in just as much as we can.
Let's get into
it
here. I mean,
since
sports aren't really starting, we're probably going to start back up on that next week. We're going to have
tons of great content, get
some really good guests, maybe even in person.
Mm-hmm.
So stay tuned for that. We have our beat reporters are going out doing some great sound bites, so we'll get to hear from some other ISU athletes in that regard. But so tonight we're going to start on the diamond here with some MLB baseball, talk about Chicago's teams, the Cubs and White Sox, separate segments for each of them tonight because those are two teams going in very different directions. And then at about 6:30, we're going to bring on Jack Polesnik on. We're going to talk some NBA action, some stuff about the finals, and then moving into this season.
Bucks, Bulls, yeah.
After that, we're going to move into the gridiron, talk about the NFL. And Joe teased a little bit there. That was just a wild night. Just going back to that real quick, the fact that we did our show at the end of that, talking about how we thought maybe the Bears were going to mess things up, all nervous about it.
Yeah.
And we're sitting back in my apartment. The Bears drafted Justin Fields, and everybody went crazy. Right. That was an all-time hopeful night. Regardless of how the Fields tenure ends up going, we'll always have that.
Yeah,
and just the fact that we didn't
videos,
get to do a show
yeah,
right
definitely.
After that.
Exactly.
I missed
that. There's such
sad.
A good video that Leo took of me and Joe when they traded up, and we were just freaking out.
I think that's what everyone was doing, though.
Oh, yeah.
But around the whole all of Chicago.
But to the Chicago team right now that has perhaps the worst future in the headlights.
Not future, but present, at least for a future for a year.
Well, that's
true, the near future.
Yeah. So we're going to get into it, okay? So
we're talking about the Chicago Cubs here because
yeah.
they did have a promising start to the year. And I think we had talked about it on the show
yeah.
a bit this year where the way they brought the roster into the season, a lot of things had to go right for maybe a possible, I hate saying it, last dance with this Cubs core where maybe mm-hmm. they could have strung some together. But it didn't go that way.
Yeah.
They were only really able to keep it together for a few months, and then the inevitable happened. They started to sell pieces off, and now they are where they are today. And it really all started after the no-hitter at Dodger Stadium.
No-hitter.
Things just went off the rails after that.
Yeah, they are 10-36 since that no-hitter happened in June. And after that, they lost 11 in a row, and then recently they just lost 12 in a row. So it's just been a shaky up and down point, but at the beginning of the year, it seems like everything was going in the right direction. The NL Central was kind of up for grabs between the Cubs, the Cardinals, and the Brewers, of course, who are kind of now dominating the division. And so it was just interesting to see how the pitching kind of evolved, because like we were saying at the beginning of the year, or in April, how this team, the pitching was kind of a question mark. Even the bullpen, like, we didn't know what Craig Kimbrell was going to be able to do coming right out of last year in his disappointing season, but you could see that it just wasn't going to be able to line up. And I think, past 4 years, you got to look at it, though. Like, what success have they really had with that team?
Right, and that's where I think the problem comes. What happened on the trade deadline had been something that was probably building since 2016.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that really every time the Cubs subtracted a contributor from their team, they didn't replace them with anyone better or at replacement value. They kept just taking away pieces from the roster as it was constructed and not bringing in anyone that could help the core. So by the end, it was just really Baez, Bryant, Rizzo, Contreras, and these guys with nothing left to help. Every time there was a useful player like a Wade Davis or Nick Castellanos, they lost them and didn't get anything really in return. So I think they were chipping away at this core until the point it was just them left, and there was only so much they could do this year.
And with that, I also thought they never knew what they were doing with their core players, with like Bryant, Rizzo, Baez, Contreras a little bit more now, but still, like, they haven't given none of them really a big contract that they all pretty much deserved. And now you're looking at a situation where you got guys that you've never even heard of on some of these on this team.
It did feel like the Cubs almost tried to pit Bryant and Rizzo mostly as the bad guys in that situation by making it seem like they wanted too much, or by the way, just even in the media, Bryant was cast as the bad guy for filing that grievance about the service time manipulations that they wanted you to let those
guys go. So much for that,
go.
Too, right?
You
that
traded
happened in 2015.
Some of the best players in your franchise history, and it was almost like people wanted it to happen. I know Joe didn't, but it seemed like they almost threw these guys under the bus on the way out, was the impression.
That's what I'm most mad about, is how the organization handled it, mostly to the players, but also just the fans. We didn't know what direction they were going to be going into, and it's just disappointing.
Yeah,
you
do a whole rebuild to get a player like Chris Bryant, and then you don't give him the tools he needs to succeed, and then don't give him the money he's earned.
And I think that it's important for Cubs fans to realize that you did get a championship out of this core. Like,
exactly.
they
and we all said also, like, oh, we only need this one championship. Like,
exactly, but you get greedy, right?
Yeah.
You get greedy and you want more.
Exactly,
and
yeah, definitely.
So from a fan's perspective, it's got to be so frustrating to watch these guys that really, like, especially Anthony Rizzo, like, you came into, you know, your teen years and into college with him being the face of the Chicago Cubs, the baseball team that you love. So for them to really tell him to not let the door hit him on his way out it seems like a really bad move from an administration standpoint as far as the fans are concerned.
Yeah, I just wish they would have got off on good terms. And some of it, that seems like they did, but also there's just coming out on radio shows, people talking.
Yeah.
Jed Hoyer, and then Rizzo went on his own radio show. But it also was disappointing that they weren't able to do anything after that 2016 season. And, like, you got to shake things up because, I mean, what else are they going to be able to do? Because if they were going to be able to keep those guys, they're going to have to be paying up the money, and then they're not going to be able to sign those people that they really would want to go to the next level like they were in 2016.
And that's what I was kind of talking about, where after the World Series, it always felt like they just had these holes they didn't fill. I mean, how many years where they just didn't have five competent starters or had maybe only two good bullpen relievers or had a gaping hole out in center field or something or didn't have a leadoff hitter? There were obvious needs that they never filled, so it just feels like they never helped out the core. And, Joe, I want to ask you, since you're our resident Cubs fan, do you think they're going all in on a rebuild? Or because I think they're going in maybe a different direction, not full rebuild, because when I look at it, they traded, of the main players they traded, with the exception of Craig Kimbrell, they were all players on expiring deals.
Mm-hmm.
Kimbrell was the only player with multiple years left of control left that might have been around for next year. I think what I look at it is I see a team that just wanted to trade players they knew they didn't weren't going to resign and maybe try to make something not competitive next year, but be competitive at the start of the season. Because we've all taken Tom LaMonica's sports communication class, right? What he said is one of the most frightening words for a sports executive is rebuild. The teams don't want to tear it down to the studs.
They don't want to do it at all.
So I look at a team that still has Hendricks, still has Contreras, has players like Ian Happ or Nico Horner. And they might be trying to just be competitive at the start of the year, see how far they go, and then do something like this again next year where trade the guys on expiring deals.
Yeah, the Jason Hayward contract, too, is just sitting there for a little bit more longer, getting paid at $21 million now a year. And with the rebuild, I really don't. I think it's going to be a shorter rebuild, but you also...
Like a retooling, maybe.
Yeah, but you also don't have much left. Like, you need almost every single position now filled up in the lineup, including the pitching staff, too, with a Zach Davies, who I think they'll do kind of like a Schwarber thing with him, not qualify him, and just have him walk. Same with Ian Happ after this year. I think they might be saying goodbye to them.
And just looking at the MLB pipeline, the Cubs only have two top 100 prospects, and now in the modern MLB, you don't get those guys by trading players on expiring deals, so... You'd think someone like a Hendricks could, or a Contreras could net you a top 100 prospect. The only two prospects they have are Brennan Davis and Braylon Marquez, both players that they either signed or drafted. So it's going to take some work to just the more spins at the wheel you get in terms of prospects, because obviously not everyone's going to pan out, but the more players you have in that pool increases the odds that some of them might be successful.
Yeah, and they have a lot of prospects that are pretty young, like Pete Crow Armstrong. He just came out of Harvard Westlake last year, first-round draft pick from the Mets, and he got them in the Baez deal. He's a prospect that has, like, a shoulder injury concern, but he also has the potential to be, I think, one of the best outfielders and potentially in the MLB, but it's all going to have to fall into place, obviously. He's had some injury issues. So, and a lot of these prospects are, like, in their teens or low 20s, so they haven't seen a lot of action in, like, MLB. Or they've been in the low-tier systems right now, in the low leagues, kind of just... And with the year of COVID, too, like, you got to think about some of these guys didn't play at all. Like, there's one player the Cubs got. He hasn't played in 2 years just because he got hurt for 1 year. Then last year he didn't get to play because of minor league baseball. So it's... I wonder if that was put into consideration when Hoyer and the front office were thinking about some of these trade partners.
And that's a good point you raise, because with these teenage prospects, you don't know how a player at 18 years, how he's going to fill out, how he's going to grow or evolve. So you have to think you have more time to let him try to develop. So that's why they're because I believe in the Yu Darvish deal, they traded for four teenagers, right? So those are four guys that you don't know what they're going to be, but you have more time with them, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And with some of the guys they got, like, Dykeman from the Athletics. He's a guy who can be put in the MLB. He's played a couple of games already for the Cubs. And then with the Giants trade, they got a right-handed pitcher, Caleb Gillen. He could get into some time probably in the next couple of years. So some of these guys, they might not have the star potential, but they're going to be players that most likely will be on an MLB team for a good amount of time.
And that's the tricky thing. You never win a trade when you give up a player like Chris Bryant.
But it was just like, oh, my God.
But Chris, you have to get something for him,
That was the one that hurt the most. And so did Anthony Rizzo. He was the captain of this team, and he's been here the longest. But the Chris Bryant one, and just the way they handled him throughout the past 4 years even, and, like, he's even expressed concern, like, are you even having fun? Remember that question you got, like, a year ago? And he's like,
I'm not happy
in
San Francisco, though.
And, yeah, he does now. And he did even last year a couple of times when just out there in, like, August and July time last year. But it's still weird to see the players on different teams. Yeah, and it's funny to see Mets fans on social media complaining about Baez.
Yeah, he strikes out a ton. Yeah,
and
no kidding.
He hits
RBIs
and hits home runs. Like,
that's
what happens with Javier Baez. And you got him on the defense flashing his swaggy leather all over the place. But I'm excited for this year. I mean, it's still going to be an interesting team to watch with who the guys they got right now. And Kyle Hendricks, he's been decent enough. First pitcher to 14 wins. And Rafael Ortega, he's been doing pretty well for the Cubs, hitting like 320. And Schwindel, man, it's Schwindel's shining season right now. As he's been one of the best hitters since he's been in the MLB for the past couple of weeks. But
yeah, you got him.
That's kind of what happens.
To focus on wisdom.
Yeah, he had that stretch.
Just lots of watching the grainy video of minor league games. That looks like it was shot on a cell phone. There's gonna be a lot of that coming up in the next couple of years. We're gonna wrap things up on the north side here. When we come back, we're gonna talk about Chicago's other baseball team and maybe their more promising future. Catch that come up next on the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
This is Illinois State infielder Owen Miller, and you're listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
That was Owen Miller, current Cleveland Guardian outfielder and former Lexington Snipe of the Midwest Collegiate League. Big shout-out to Brandon Vickery and everybody over at the Northwest Indiana Oilmen for providing me with
info. Okay.
A couple of Red Bird alums played in the MCL, which was a fun connection, most notably Paul DeYoung, so got to work in a league while also having some ISU connections, which is always fun.
Yeah.
But we're moving things to, well, I guess Miller's division rival now, the Chicago White Sox, and maybe their more promising future.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Cubs have to go through a rebuild. The Sox went through one, and now they're reaping the benefits of it.
Yeah.
When things maybe looked disastrous at times of the year, they still overcame it, and now we are here.
Yeah.
The Sox feeling very good with an 11.5 game lead in the NL Central. Where do we go from here, boys? Where do we want to start?
I think that one of the things that you have to appreciate about the White Sox this season especially is how they've been able to overcome the injury problems that they've had, because you saw very early in the season Eloy Jimenez and Luis Robert both out for a very significant amount of time, and then within that span you also lost other more supplementary players to smaller injuries. Yeah. Adam Engel, Billy Hamilton was out for a stretch. Yeah, exactly. So a lot of guys falling down, but there was always somebody there to step up, and that's something, as a White Sox fan, I'm not really used to, because we've never had the depth of talent that we do now, or at least since I've been a cognizant fan of the team. So it's just been really fun to watch. And you know what? I hate to say it, because we ragged on him last year.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about that.
But Tony La Russa has done all right job.
Yeah, he's impressed. He's a shoo-in for AL Manager of the Year, which he was actually the first winner of that award back in 1983,
yeah,
which is pretty funny.
So weird.
but, I mean, for all the flaws we said about him, all the problems off the field, that guy knows how to bullpen. He really does know how to use a pitching staff in a flexible way. He knows how to use, at times when this bullpen struggled, he knew how to ride the hot hand, use a lot of players the right way, knew how to use Liam Hendricks correctly. He's been able to let him get multiple inning saves. And the thing I think is different about him than Ricky Renteria, he'll maybe keep a starting pitcher in an inning too late, then take him out an inning too early, which we complained a lot about Renteria, which that really helps. Maybe the pitcher's a little upset when he leaves after he had a bad inning, but it gives him that confidence knowing that his manager will let him work through things. And he does that a lot with relievers that have a bad outing. He'll throw them out there the next day or the next 2 days, and that just really has to install a lot of confidence in his relievers that he's not just getting on these guys and benching them.
There's a positive and a negative to hiring a true old-fashioned baseball guy as your manager. The positives being that he's the type of guy who will throw you in after a bad outing. He's not going to let you get down on yourself because you had one bad relief. At the same time, some of our worries were that he wouldn't really adapt to some of the new ways that the game is played.
And this, I said it even back when they hired him, he was one of the first managers to use an opener. That was something he'd use on like the third game of a series before they hit a road trip back with the Oakland A's. So he knew, kind of started using these things maybe before other managers did, and he can change with the game, and that's been proven. And I just want to go back to the thing about the injuries real quick. I think what's impressed me the most is the way that they've been able to fill these massive holes left by play. You lose Eloy Jimenez, rips his armpit out before the season even starts. Luis Robert, about a week into the season. But then you have guys like Andrew Vaughn, who was a draft pick here, Gavin Sheets, Sebi Zavala, players that you drafted and developed that maybe aren't starters or stars yet for your team, but you're able to fill it from players you drafted, players you scouted, signed, rose through the ranks in your minor leagues. That's how you do well in the major leagues. That's how you have a championship roster, by having just good player development. And that's what they had. You have the players you acquired through trades, like your Moncadas and Giolitos, but then you have guys that were second-round picks like Sheets that could come in and pick up some of the slack when there are injuries.
And you also did trade some of those prospects for people like Craig Kimbrell, Ryan Tepera. But with talking about those prospects, do you think down the road they kind of got an influx of, like, DH outfielders, first basemen?
Well, let's touch on that.
What do you...
So Andrew Vaughn was a first baseman his whole life, and they taught him how to play outfield. Connor McKnight on the post-game show for the Sox had the point that he's like a Swiss Army knife, but if you took one of the... You took the corkscrew, and you're using it to try to, like, cut something with it. You're using maybe not the tools that were designed for, but you're putting it in other places, and it's working. That he's someone they've been able to have play second base. He's played first base. He's played both corner outfield positions. I think he even played a game in center field. Yeah. So he's just proven to be such a versatile player. And I think that's probably something they look for, players that maybe don't know how to play multiple positions but have good athleticism, versatility, because now they're doing the same thing with Gavin Sheets. He was infielder DH by trade, and now they're teaching him how to play the outfield as well. So I think it's one of those things, they have players that are willing to learn. I mean, kind of like when Joe Maddon was the manager, that they had the right players with the attitude to play with his style, where guys weren't going
to
pout because they weren't playing their natural position.
Buy into
but
it, and they know they're a good team, too. Like,
and that's easier to do when you're winning games with this team. I think some of these players realize that you're part of something special here, so do what the team asks you to do, and it's really worked well for everybody involved.
And I think you see a lot of that around the league right now, where guys are having to adapt and play different positions based on their team's needs. And I think that the game is kind of trending that way, and so, again, Tony La Russa being kind of ahead of the curve there, really emphasizing that to some of the younger guys, which is very fun to see. And then the pitching rotation for the Sox, too, coming into the season, we all had high hopes. And at least for me, I have not been let down.
Yeah. I think I was more skeptical of it because you didn't know what you were going to get out of Carlos Rodon. And that, he was the wild card, where he's had great stuff his whole career, but hasn't been able to stay healthy, hasn't really pitched past June in his major league career as wild as that is. And now he's on the DL, but that's more of a service thing. I think that's when you're up 10 games in August, put
him
on the DL, let
him
get healthy.
Be safe,
yeah,
definitely.
But so he's the wild card, and that's really worked out. Dylan Cease has been iffy to start the year, but he's really, I think, gotten better as the season's gone on. And even you got Ronaldo Lopez coming out of the bullpen, got the Jameis Winston LASIK eye surgery, and now he can see the plate and is able to throw strikes again.
But you guys have one of the best problems, I think, in the MLB, and that's who's going to be the closer.
The way that we've seen it, and the way that I think about it, is Craig Kimbrell.
I think it's a day-to-day
thing. I think Craig Kimbrell is one of the best closers in the game.
Yeah.
But I think Liam Hendricks is the best closer in the game.
Okay.
So I like, if it's the seventh game of the World Series, bottom of the ninth, I want Liam Hendricks in there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so nice to have both of them in there because, like, if one guy goes out and he's not having a great game and you go, like, into extras, you got another great closing pitcher.
It's all about insurance and maybe overstaffing, overstockpiling arms, and now La Russa started to strategically use that to his advantage. There are days where, like last night's game, he had Hendricks get five outs because he knew Kimbrell was going to pitch. So he budgets that, knowing Kimbrell's going to be the closer one day, Hendricks another, and then you can maybe ask for them to do a little more on the days they are pitching because you know you have another guy that could be the closer in the next game.
And you have other guys in the bullpen, too, I think, that could close out games.
I mean,
Aaron Bummer,
I think he's the wild card out of that staff, too.
Bullpen,
like, if he's on his game going into playoffs, he's a great lefty to have coming out of the pen. And then you have Kopech out there, who's just a monster coming out of the pen. If you go Kopech, Kimbrell, Hendricks out of the bullpen in a playoff game, that could be very scary for opposing hitters.
Is there anyone on the team right now that you think that's just been disappointing or maybe kind of fell off? Because this team's obviously probably the best team in baseball, or at least top two, top three team in baseball. So what do you think they would have to improve or to for sure at least try to be successful in the offseason?
I mean,
forward?
The worst part about it is there's nobody in my mind who's been, like, overly disappointing. It's just been the injuries that have really affected the team. And I've never been, like, a huge Yasmani Grandal guy. Like, I think he's very good. but I've just never really been sold on him as, like, the best catcher we could have had.
I think you're seeing just how important he was to this team now that he's gone.
Exactly my point. Like, it's just, like, the disappointing part of him right now is that he's not there.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing with our outfield all year. Although we'll get to Billy Hamilton, but oh my goodness, talk about the opposite of a disappointment. But there's no one really who I've been super disappointed with, except I really can't even say, except maybe Giolito.
And that's,
but
he's still
exactly
had some good outings.
Exactly. And, so I there's
looked it up.
He's had his best games against good teams too, against the Rays and the Astros. He's risen to the occasion, so that's promising, even though he struggled a little bit. I'd say the only disappointing thing is we haven't gotten to see the full roster healthy at the same time, so you don't kind of know what your ideal playoff lineup looks like, or maybe if players will be hitting their stride at the right time coming in the playoffs because they're still getting acclimated. So nobody's been disappointing, per se. I think you're starting to find out what you have in some of your guys. I think one of the players I've seen taking a lot of heat is Yoan Moncada for his streaky nature. But I think that's just how he is at this point. That's what he is in his career, that he'll go through cold spells, but when he's hot, he is an elite player. But there are just going to be stretches where he doesn't hit the ball, and that's baseball for you.
Yeah, not everyone can be that superstar.
And it honestly doesn't matter how he hits until we get to October. Like, if he wants to be a 200 hitter until we get to October, that's fine by me, because the lead that the Sox have built up in the AL Central right now, they're pretty much untouchable unless one of the other teams really starts getting hot, and that's a really nice benefit of playing in the worst division in baseball.
Yeah, And that's why I really think you have to go all in this year, because you don't know if you're going to have an opportunity like this next year or years after that where the division's going to be this bad. Yeah. That's why you see them make an aggressive move, trade a player like Nick Madrigal, who has potential, for a player like Craig Kimbrell. You got better in the short term because you have to for this year, because, well, like we talked about with the Cubs, you may only have one chance in your window where you really have to go all in, and you have to maximize that
exactly,
opportunity.
Exactly, because you think you would have more just with the team you have. You have all these young guys, because the Cubs are in a situation pretty much just like this. You think you're going to have it all, but it's over just like that, boys. Trust me. Trust me about that.
Well, unfortunately, the Sox have already started extending some of their guys. They're not afraid to pay their players, but that's a different problem.
Rick Hahn's got some pockets that he can dip into, but...
But it's not always about paying, too. You got to think about...
Keep your players happy.
Well, yeah, keeping players happy and just the production going up. But you're talking about the division. Now, it's kind of a struggle this year, but overall, the American League is still very strong, and there's still some teams that you're going to have to worry about.
And there is, to shout out your boy Ant Riz.
The Yankees.
The Yankees are scary. And
he's out right now, but when he's been playing, he's batting like 300.
And aside from the beautiful... Field of Dreams games. Let me just go on a real quick tangent, but as a born and raised Iowa boy, oh my God, the fact that they actually played in Dyersville, unreal.
Dyersville.
I was in Iowa City watching the game at a bar, and it was just a beautiful sight. All of these homegrown Iowans seeing professional sports played in our state. It was beautiful. But aside from the Sox winning that game, I'm pretty sure they haven't beaten the Yankees yet this year. And so it's kind of scary knowing that that's the kind of competition. And the Sox have had success against good teams, with the exception of the Yankees, who they could foreseeably see in the ALDS or CS.
I'm still not worried about how you do it against a team in the regular season. Just like how we mentioned, the Sox haven't had their full roster yet.
Yeah.
Like, I saw the tweet the other day that the Sox had a losing record in 2005 against the Red Sox and the Angels. I think they only won two games against both of those teams, and they, you know, swept the Red Sox, beat the Angels 4-1. So at this point, I don't worry about games that happen in August, because all that matters is the nine guys you're putting on the field in October. And with this team, they haven't played a full, complete game yet with their full roster, and may not have played their best baseball yet. So I think you just have to make sure everybody's healthy going into October. And maybe let some of these teams that are trying to go all in, push for the playoffs, tire themselves out now, strain themselves. I just can't get worried about their record against certain teams right now.
That's a good point.
And you brought up 2005, so it begs the question, before we have to send it to break,
all right,
who would you rather have Game 7 of the World Series coming in the bottom of the ninth inning? Liam Hendricks, Craig Kimbrell, or Bobby Jenks?
Oh, man. That is a loaded question.
Bobby Jenks in his prime. Bobby Jenks in 05.
Yeah, because Bobby Jenks had a short prime, but when he was on, he was so good. I mean, I still think just Liam Hendricks, when he's on, he's one of those guys where he is such a – there's so much different he can do. Because Jenks, for the most part, he threw heat. And heat back in 2005 was like 95, 96. Like, that's different from just
so
throwing heat
crazy
now.
To think
Hendricks
about.
Can mix speeds and locations. There's so much he can do. And he can go get you a six-out save, which that's not a lot of closers can do. So I might go with Hendricks there.
Going with the Aussie.
Joe, have an answer there?
For me?
Yeah.
I'll take Craig Kimbrell. I mean, he's obviously the top seven closer of all time.
Or you could throw
an
Joe, for 2016 Cubs, you could throw Aroldis Chapman in there, too.
Oh, well, I mean, yeah, he was dominant for us in that year.
He was
just
crazy.
Overplayed him, so that was still probably the scariest moment of my life. That inning.
And we'll reminisce some more throughout the rest of the semester, I'm sure, about our teams. But we're going to wrap it up on baseball. When we come back, we're going to hit the hardwood. Jack Pleasnik's going to be on.
Yeah.
Stick around for that. Coming up next on the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation. Back talking hoops here on the Red Zone. Leo Sauterher, Joey Dwyer, and Joe Kennedy. Now Jack Pleasnik comes on. Jack is our native Milwaukee expert here.
Wisconsin guy.
The local cheese head of the station. And it was a pretty good summer for Milwaukee sports fans with a little
Rogers
basketball being played.
Too, and then also, with some NBA going on.
Oh, guys, don't even start me on Aaron Rodgers, though.
It was a big summer for the state of Wisconsin, that's for sure.
Probably the biggest they've ever had, really.
Yeah, I mean... Yeah. Probably, besides Packers winning the Super Bowl,
Biggest since 2010. I guess they won in 2011, technically. So.
Yeah, that's true.
Of 2011. It's been a long time.
Yeah, it's been a long time. But let's get to the Milwaukee Bucks, because this is a team that had a lot of criticism just because of the way they are and everything, and being in Milwaukee. But, Jack, you've been a Bucks fan for a while, so how was it feeling that when Milwaukee was able to put up that championship over all the haters people would like to hate on, the Bucks sometimes, and so...
Yeah, sometimes. it felt really nice, and because there was a lot of noise from a lot of fans throughout the league, constantly, and many Bucks fans calling for the firing of Coach Bud, and people
that
thought that Giannis was going to leave, and I would see so many things about him, he's going to go to the Lakers or whatever, and in the back of my head, I'm thinking, all these people are wrong. I had a feeling deep down, and I think it's called bias, that Giannis is going to stay in Milwaukee, and he did. And, that's ultimately led to this championship. And, really Giannis, and there's more players than just Giannis and Chris Middleton on that team, of course. Those two guys, to me, really represent the city of Milwaukee. They've been around for such a long time. I was lucky enough to meet Chris Middleton quite a long time ago. Yeah, it's kind of a funny story. My dad delivers pizzas in Milwaukee, and he brought me on a delivery one time and just be delivered to Chris Middleton. I got to see him. I think I was like 12 years old or something. And
that's when he was like no one, too. Like,
yeah, no, not too
really
many people knew
nothing.
Who he was.
Yeah, like he was on the end of the bench for the Bucks at that point. And that's what's so interesting about the Bucks, how Middleton and Giannis, they stayed together for basically 5 years from being one of the worst teams to finally winning that trophy together and doing it for Milwaukee. And I just love... I'm a big Giannis guy just because of the way he plays and the way how he stayed in Milwaukee, just a small market team that he's not going off to L.A. or even here in Chicago or New York or going down to South Beach. He stayed with the team, and a lot of people were calling him to leave, and people were saying he was never going to win a championship in Milwaukee. He doesn't have the help to win a championship, and he goes out there and does it the hard way, and that just was what was so amazing with how he won it this year.
And that's what I think made it a really – entertaining final was the fact that it wasn't maybe two of your traditional power markets playing with the Bucks and the Suns, where you had two smaller market teams that you don't see in the finals play that often, that you really don't see in the spotlight that much, that just put on a really good show. And I think about that battle between Giannis and Devin Booker. You had two star players playing their best basketball in the finals. Mm-hmm. I'm a casual NBA fan, but I was reeled in by that, just seeing how those two rose to the occasion and really just took over. And because you don't always have that, where the best games of a playoffs are played in the championship, where sometimes it's in the second round or the conference finals. But this NBA finals really did seem to live up to that hype.
And like you mentioned, you can see a great games in the conference finals. And that conference finals, Bucks-Nets, was an intense series. And all credit to the Bucks, right? But I thought there was no way. I thought there was no way they were going to go in there. KD looked like an
best player like ever played the game. Almost.
Kevin Durant's playoff run was insane. He carried that team. It has other superstars.
They also got
hurt. That they were banged up.
Yeah.
But still, KD was really carrying. And that shot at the end of the game when his foot was on the line. Like, were you watching the game live?
I was watching that, and I have vivid memories. I mean, I was visiting home, and I was sitting down a coffee table in the living room, and, I mean, my dogs were near me. I just remember, I'm saying this all because it's such a vivid memory to me, and my heart completely stopped when he shot that. I had such a terrible sinking feeling that was going to go in, and it did, but... and when I first watched it, I didn't think his foot was on the line.
I knew it. Everyone was screaming. And
I thought it was over.
He's on the line. I was like, replay it. And then they finally just zoom it in. And it's literally like if he had a size 13 instead of a 13.5, let's say, he probably would have made it. And that's been the talk of like, and that's what people take away from the Bucks though. Like people are saying, oh, if KD's shoe size was a little smaller, they wouldn't be champions. Like, I mean,
but if the Bucks would have dominated that game, KD wouldn't have had to make that shot.
Yeah,
so,
if they didn't come back down, 3-1.
It's a series of events, and like the Bucks are a much deserving NBA champion. They played very tough opponents all throughout the Eastern Conference, and then in the finals as well. Leo, you were talking about the Suns, and Chris Paul and Devin Booker were really fun to watch this playoffs as well. Mm-hmm. And so...
Chris Paul, yeah.
It's just, but when you think about that Suns team and you think about the legacy of Chris Paul, how many more chances does he really have?
Yeah, I mean, that might have been his best opportunity, especially since he just re-upped there.
Yeah.
I mean, who knows where he'll be next.
And I mean, they'll still have a chance, though, with the Suns. I think, I mean, the West is just going to get harder, though, with the Warriors and everything keep building up. But I think there's still going to be a chance. I know people are saying he might have been hurt a little in the finals, but there are some games where he really wasn't doing much on the court, and it was a problem for Phoenix. They couldn't really do anything. I mean, he could always go to his mid-range little spin step back, but otherwise he was getting kind of clamped up. When they put Drew Holiday on, who's probably the best perimeter defender in the NBA, it was all over at that point.
And I think that you'll see as the Suns go forward in the next couple of years, I think that they can remain competitive while kind of decreasing the importance of Chris Paul in that roster. Mm-hmm. When you see how much better DeAndre Ayton has gotten over the past couple of years, I remember he was insane coming out of college. Yeah. The hype around him was unreal.
Luka picked in front of Trey.
Exactly, but it took a little while for him to really live up to that hype. His first couple of years in Phoenix were kind of a disappointment. And so now, as he's really establishing himself as one of the best big men in the league, I think that's a really good situation for Phoenix to be in. And they have a couple other young guys. As big Bulls fans, you guys know Campaign.
And Campaign, too.
Campaign had a nice little playoffs.
He did.
He did.
I mean,
he did a little something.
There was that point where he just thought he was... like the best, like I thought it was like Michael Jordan at some
he's got
point.
That
you
Nick,
get the ball
he's got
like,
that Nick Young mentality.
Yeah,
that
he
swaggy
really has
B.
that mentality. And like sometimes it helps, but sometimes he would go out there and go 1-for-8 on the night and kind of be like, "All right, calm down, your Campaign."
And so talking about former Bulls and going to current Bulls, quite the offseason for the Chicago Bulls. Joe, I think you're the biggest Bulls fan in the studio right now.
It just completely changed, and there's some people out there that are still disappointed, kind of, in what the Bulls did this year. But after 4 or 5 years of mediocrity, it's like, all right, enough is enough. We got to build a team around Zach LaVine, who had better stats than Devin Booker last year in the regular season because he hasn't made the playoffs yet, and that's what a lot of other people say about LaVine. He doesn't make the playoffs. He hasn't made it yet. Neither did Booker until he got some solid pieces around him, and now you consider Devin Booker as one of the best offensive players.
And can you guys explain to me the hate that's come to the Chicago Bulls around some of these players that they've acquired? Like, when they first signed DeMar DeRozan, all that I heard was, oh, well, he's overpaid.
He's taking the ball from LaVine, yeah.
But DeMar DeRozan is still an NBA All-Star. He is on a team now where he's going to be, what, the third option?
Yeah, I'd say so.
He's better than most every other third option in the league, unless you count James Harden.
Yeah, I'm still a little worried, though, how the offense would work with him and LaVine, because they both kind of need the ball.
Yeah.
But I think DeMar DeRozan, kind of in Toronto, though, was able to be a bit of a playmaker. Once he got to San Antonio, he was able to become more of a playmaker. So it'll be interesting to see how that works together. And with their defense, too, because DeMar DeRozan, he's an average defender. Zach LaVine, probably below average, but he tries now more on defense, it seems, and that he's improved on that. But the interior defense, that's where the Bulls might get beat up on. With Patrick Williams, who's 6'8", it's pretty big, but he's also still really young and still pretty skinny. And then Vucevic, who's more of an offensive big man. So that's where teams are probably going to be eaten up on the Bulls. And in the East, there's a lot of good big men in that side.
I mean, still the way I look at it was this summer was building towards maybe something bigger, where in the modern NBA, it's all about trading and free agency. And for the longest time, the Bulls had not been able to attract free agents through regime changes and whatnot. Now they're able to get players that want to come here. Both Lonzo and DeRozan wanted to play here.
Caruso,
too, of course.
Caruso is coming to Chicago.
So even if these aren't the players that bring them necessarily to a championship, they can help them go get other players. Mm-hmm. That they make players want to come play for the Bulls, want to play for this culture, and that's building towards something. So maybe this year they might be a 5 seed or something, but they could keep adding to this team, build around this core they have. They'll be fun. Like I was just saying, I'm a casual NBA fan. I could look at this roster, and they have names I've heard of.
And
players
like you would turn on a game,
too, a
especially
bit.
As
yeah.
a casual fan. Like, you would turn into a Bulls game now. Past 3 years, did you ever really watch a Bulls game?
No, not really. I mean, they got Lonzo Ball, big baller brand, ball don't lie. That makes me want to tune in.
Definitely does. I mean, it's going to be an exciting year, and there's still some things that they could possibly do with Lauri Markkanen. Still don't know, but I'm excited for it.
And that will just about do it on the hardwood here. When we come back, we're going to go over to the gridiron because there was a lot that happened that we haven't gotten to yet.
And we got a Packers fan with us.
For both of our teams. That's coming up next on the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.
This is Barstool Big Cat, and you're listening to the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
And back here with Leo Sauter, Joey Dwyer, Joe Kennedy, now Jack Plesnik. Let's move it in here, Jack. Aaron Rodgers this summer. You're a Packers fan. How were you feeling? Did you think he was going to report, or were you worried that he might be playing in a different uniform this year?
Well, at the very beginning of the whole saga, I guess you could call it, I did not believe he was going to return to Green Bay, and that's because of the way that it was reported by Adam Schefter. The way it happened, it seemed like, Aaron Rodgers, wanted to put this out on draft night to distract from whatever the Packers were going to do, and that this was a very imminent situation that had just, flared up or maybe only had been building up for a month or so. And so I thought things would transpire very quickly. What we ended up learning was that it was more of an accumulation of information over a long amount of time that Schefter just happened to release on draft day, and he said it wasn't even to distract from the draft. It just so happened to be that day, which I think for someone who is so involved in the NFL, I think that's a little ridiculous in my opinion. But so at that point, I did think Rodgers was going to leave. But as the summer went on and we passed by these deadlines, I know people were saying, I think it was June 1st or May 1st, that, he's going to be traded to Denver for whatever reason. And then I think it was May. And then in June, there was something about opting out of the season, which was introduced because of COVID last year. Mm-hmm. They thought, Aaron Rodgers is going to opt out. So June 2nd, he's going to opt out, and it's all over. And then that came and went, and he didn't leave the team. He didn't opt out. And so as the summer went on, I really started to think, I think he's going to be back. And then hearing those kind of little rumors bubbling up heading into training camp that he was going to return after missing mini camp for the first time in his career, I felt pretty confident that he would be making it day one, and he did. And I'm very thankful to have him on the team. I was getting a little nervous. As much as I would talk smack with my fellow Bears fans around here saying, Jordan Love is going to be that dude, which he will be, but I didn't believe myself entirely because there's very little evidence to base that on. So I'm happy to have 12 under center and ready to win the NFC North again.
Okay, so you have 12 under center, as you put it, for one more year.
We don't know that.
Yes, we do. Because
no, we
saw. Okay, Jack, let's all be real with ourselves. All right?
Sure.
We saw the Last Dance picture from Aaron Rodgers on Instagram. We saw the Devontae Adams Last Dance picture. Mm. So all signs, and granted, we're not on the inner circles, but I'd like to think that I can decode what that means. And if all of the reports we've heard, regardless of whether or not Aaron Rodgers stayed in Green Bay this season, was that he was fed up with the management, he hated playing under Gutekunst, and so do you think something has to change to get Aaron Rodgers to stay in for this foreseeable future? Do you think he'll stay regardless, or do you think he's gone regardless?
I I think it's impossible to make it such a black and white situation. I think this season really will determine what happens. And they've already, they as in the organization, the Packers have done better. They took that last year off of his current contract, so he has a lot more mobility after this season. They traded for Randall Cobb, which I'm excited to have him back in the Green Bay offense. We also had drafted Amari Rodgers, so now we have two Randall Cobbs, which is pretty fun. But I think if Green Bay is really successful this year, and let's say they win the Super Bowl, let's say they finally get past the hump that is the NFC Championship, which I know you guys are ready to clown on me about.
Yeah.
At least we've actually made it to one recently. By the way, the last time the Bears made it, I'm sure you all know, 2010 season, we beat the Chicago Bears and we won the Super Bowl, and you guys haven't won one since 1985. Anyway, back on topic here. I think if Green Bay wins the Super Bowl, for example, Aaron Rodgers will come back.
Yeah.
He said, and I think it was the first interviews of training camp, that they're going to reassess the situation. They, as in Aaron Rodgers and the Packers, are going to reassess the situation and at the end of the season, and they'll see where they're at. And if Green Bay does win the championship, then I think Aaron Rodgers will stay. And if not, then he may end up leaving. But it's impossible to call right now in August.
I think kind of what – it's usually how teams give players a prove-it type deal, but – I think Aaron Rodgers is kind of giving the Packers a prove-it deal because he's like, I only want 1 year. Prove it that you're going to build this team around me. Prove it that you're going to change some things up to help me get past this point and get me to the championship game, because it's just been disappointing, I guess, for him. And as a fan, Jack, were you ever, like, disappointed in Rodgers and how he was handling it? Or were you just kind of, like, with him? Or were you kind of like, what's going on? Like, confused at all?
I was very confused. I felt that the way he was going about it and really buying into this whole media circus and not doing anything to stop it was a little frustrating as a fan, certainly.
Yeah.
But also his grievances that he has are completely valid. And it wasn't so much about not bringing guys in, but it was about letting guys go. Yeah. Someone like Clay Matthews or Jared Cook or Josh Sitton, TJ Lang, you know, just to name a few. You know, those are guys who maybe while their play declined would have been good leadership, which is very important. And you maybe get in a situation where, I'll go to the 2015 season. We drafted Demarius Randall and Quentin Rollins to be our two new corners. And we had just recently gotten rid of Casey Hayward. Or actually, no, Casey Hayward was on the team that year. It was the following year he left.
Mm-hmm.
But if you keep someone like Casey Hayward around, who his play was dropping off at the time in Green Bay, but if you keep him around as veteran leadership, and having that presence, perhaps the development of someone like Demarius Randall or Quentin Rollins is better, and we don't see those guys out of the league like they are now. Or at least Quentin Rollins is certainly out of the league.
But the way I look at it is, you know, in the NFL, you have to always think about getting younger and cheaper. You're looking for someone as replacement right when you draft them. You're always looking for that next option. That's the way it is. You know, some of these guys, they have a short shelf life. They have a short prime, so you have to already think of how to replace them, let them go. But when you have a quarterback like Aaron Rodgers, you have to keep them keyed in on personnel decisions. I think we see that a lot with Mahomes or guys like Brady, that they do seem to have good communication with ownership. And so, yes, well, maybe it made sense to release someone like Clay Matthews if you wanted to replace him from within. But I think the way it seemed, Rodgers was upset he wasn't told about it or wasn't made aware of it till it happened. I think when you have a star quarterback like an Aaron Rodgers, you have to keep them in communication. No, maybe are you going to do the things he tells you to do? Because let's face it, some players might not. There's a reason they're not general managers. There's a reason they're players. But you have to at least communicate with them. Make him feel like he's part of the process. Because really, without Aaron Rodgers, none of the other pieces matter because you're still looking for that quarterback.
And right. I think that Gutekunst also kind of resented the fact that he felt that Aaron Rodgers was more in control of the team and of personnel decisions than he was. But, I mean, at the end of the day, Rodgers' tenure with the Packers is way more important to the fans than the general manager. The only thing the general manager is going to do by ostracizing Aaron Rodgers is make the fans hate him. And so I feel like as poorly as I feel that Aaron Rodgers handled it, and I just don't like Aaron Rodgers, like, don't get me wrong.
Really? No way.
But I think that management handled it so much worse.
I think Rodgers was kind of baller in the way he handled it, how he just got everybody going. Like, I thought that
was
pretty funny.
It was to play golf
like,
in the match,
yeah,
too. Just like, yeah,
he was
go play
the
golf.
Flames, and I thought
too.
That was pretty hilarious. He just made it pretty funny.
I think we all need to acknowledge that a Chicago native, Leo Stauder, just gave Aaron Rodgers props.
Yeah,
And I don't think I can accept it.
Rodgers, he plays for the bad team. He's mean and evil. Rodgers bad.
We can say
Leo, I need you to be a meathead at least one time. Just one time I need meathead Leo to come out. Maybe when we start talking about the Hawks later.
I think we'll get that more as the Sox move into the postseason.
Okay, there we go.
The meatball will come out.
So we're talking about Rodgers, and who knows if he'll be back next year or not. But what is going to be back next year is the Chicago Bears quarterback, Justin Fields. And
yes,
it could be a time for him to maybe make it his division. But we also still going to have to see.
Joe, I actually think it's going to be Jared Goff's division.
Jared Goff, he's out of the question. Kirk Cousins.
No, Kellen Mond.
Kellen Mond. Or yeah, Kellen Mond. Everyone's Vikings fans saying that's something us four can all agree on. Vikings, Kellen Mond.
Irrelevant.
I don't know what you'd be talking about with Kellen Mond as your quarterback over Kirk Cousins, who they also talk about is glory Kirk Cousins, who really is just the most average quarterback you probably have on your team. But with the Bears, they went down a weird route, I feel like, in this offseason, or especially in the draft, going with two with Tevin Jenkins. It wasn't a weird pick, though, but things are coming out recently with his back issues that teams knew about, and that's why he slid down in the draft.
So that's what I think maybe annoys me the most, because that seems like such a Ryan Pace thing, where he was ranked around maybe pick 18 to 20 as that rank as a prospect in the draft. So that's a good market value. Think about it. You get that player in the second round. But if you knew about these back injuries and other players, teams knew, why wasn't he maybe getting that back surgery right after you drafted him? Why was it right before the season? Or I feel like that's just Ryan Pace being Ryan Pace.
Pace also did with Jalen Johnson and Eddie Jackson. They're both two guys that fell down the draft because of injuries, and Jalen Johnson,
but
maybe not yet.
They didn't need surgery. They had already had it. That's what I
but
think.
Still,
those
but,
were players on the mend. They weren't players that still needed to be healed. And big dudes needing back surgery, I feel like that doesn't heal well. And if you knew he had that problem going into the draft, it's not like that's a problem that's going to go away.
I was going to say, teams knew about his back problems, but I don't think surgery was really on the table until training camp.
Yeah.
And he, like Joe said, he aggravated that injury at training camp. And Joe makes an excellent point again when he talks about guys like Jalen Johnson and Eddie Jackson. Eddie Jackson had missed his entire senior season, and when he got drafted, he was 4 months off of an ACL surgery.
Yeah.
So this is something that I think Ryan Pace does well, and it's going to be really hard to not see Tevin Jenkins on the Bears this year, because I was so excited,
but
he is going to be a monster for years to come.
But knowing the risk, though, with Tevin Jenkins when they took him, they also had Charles Leno that was still sitting there, and they just decided to let Leno go, who, he had one of the most penalties in the NFL last year.
And he was so expensive.
But, yeah, expensive, I guess, but he wasn't as much as you would think he would be, and he would
provide that
experience.
It's what you have to pay an offensive lineman in the NFL.
And right
now,
kind of
how it is.
They need that on the offensive line. But I think that O-line is going to be a little bit better than what people may seem it to be.
And I think there was a lot of improvement with some of the young guys like Alex Barrs and Sam Mustipha, who stepped up at the end of last year and were really able to solidify at least that right side of the offensive line. And you're going to have James Daniels hopefully come back healthy this year. You've got Cody Whitehair completely healthy.
Right now.
So hopefully by week one, the Bears are going to be able to trot out a serviceable offensive line. But I want to ask you guys this question because we're kind of running out of time.
Yeah.
This is a debate that I've had with my boys for weeks and weeks and weeks now. When do you want to see Justin Fields take over for Andy Dalton? Because I've heard anywhere from week one to next season.
I
want to know what you guys are thinking.
I want him to go in week one. With saying how the quarterback play is out of him and with Andy Dalton. But if they're going to put him in, I do not want to put him in at all if the team is doing bad, and that's just going to be an excuse to put him in.
Because
that's just not going to do anything. If you're going to put him in week one, he has a whole year of experience. There's no such thing as sitting out a year. The Chiefs did that with Mahomes just because Alex Smith was one of the best quarterbacks that year.
I still just don't. I think they'll be throwing him into a bad situation with the offensive line potentially in shambles, with guys being hurt, trying to get back to 100%. We're still trying to find the rhythm. Who's playing what position? Where you have now Cole Kmet's a little banged up, where you maybe have some gaping holes at wide receiver. I feel like he probably shouldn't play week one, and I'm just afraid that they're going to mismanage when they put him in. That's going to
exactly
be Matt Nagy
thinking,
coaching for his job, thinking that will buy him more time if he makes that move too early.
But I don't think he's coaching for his job this year, no matter what his record, the record goes this year. Even if they go 4 wins, 3 wins, like, you'll be like, oh, we still have Justin Fields in a whole nother year, which is also kind of true. Like, you got to think about that.
They do say that drafting a quarterback is going to buy you a year. And I was on the side of Leo, where I didn't want them to mismanage him and put him in too early until I watched that preseason game.
Oh,
and I know it's a preseason.
No, listen.
I got upset about the preseason.
Listen,
good in the preseason?
Jordan Love.
Mitchell,
I know.
Trubisky.
Yeah, that's true. I think Mitch is still a good quarterback. I think he's starting caliber.
No, listen.
Well, it was a great show, everybody.
Oh, my God. Okay, so after watching the preseason game, and I know. Okay, I know that it's preseason. I know it's the second string Miami Dolphins defense. Okay, I know that. However, the way that Justin Fields was able to carry himself on the field, he looked like a professional quarterback.
Yeah, and he's done that in the training camp too. You've seen it all over social media because people can't post anything because the Bears are just like that. They don't like the social media of the plays going out. But you see all these beat reporters writing down how Fields has been doing. There are some passes, and they're just showing he's had good times. And yeah. Nagy, during training camp with Trubisky, was saying, oh, yeah, he's still got to look at the field better. But with, like, Fields, he's saying he already knows how to look down the field.
And
it's
that's
other
why I'm in no rush
on.
To get him in. If the situation around him isn't good, give him a few weeks before you throw him into that fire until you could figure out what to do with the rest of the team, because
the
he could be that good. Don't throw him into the fire too soon, because that's where damage happens.
Do you wait until the Bears are playing well to put him in? Like, I know that seems a little weird. Like, if they're playing well, why
won't put him in at all?
Why go away from Dalton? But that's exactly what the Dolphins did last year with Ryan Fitzpatrick, and then they went to Tua.
And last season, the Bears did the complete opposite, right? So, like, Mitch was struggling. He threw that one interception against the Falcons. They yanked him, and then they lost, what, 6 straight games, 7 straight games, something like that?
Yeah, that's why if you make that move at the wrong time, it could unravel your whole season.
Yeah.
So
exactly.
I don't know what the right answer is, but I don't think Matt Nagy does either, and that's what I'm afraid of.
I don't think anyone does at the moment.
I truly think that if you do go with Dalton, you just have to ride him out until the time is right.
Yeah.
And honestly, I guess we'll wait and see what that right time is going to be.
Well, we're being played off now. We're getting kicked out of our booth here, so
you guys got a meeting to get to.
Yeah, that's a good point. We haven't plugged that at all. There's the general information meeting. If you want to be part of WZND, maybe take our jobs after we just kick Joey off after those takes, you can come to the Center for Vocational Arts, room 145. Meeting starting right now, so if you're listening to this, hurry on over. Get there. Come be a part of our WZND team. I'd like to thank Jack Pelesnik for coming on. I'd like to thank the boys, Joey and Joe, for a great first show.
Thank you
for
having me.
Getting the ball rolling.
Yeah.
And we have a lot of big things coming in store this semester. Have some Redbird sports coming up. Have some really good guests. Mm-hmm. Stick around. It'll be Thursday nights at 6 all semester. The best is yet to come. So once again, I thank you for listening. Great show. Hope to see you again next week. This has been The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
To hear this and other past episodes of The Red Zone again, download the Red Zone podcast online at WZND.com or on iTunes. And of course, tune into the Red Zone every Thursday at 6, right here on 103.3 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.